Why is it that most of the people who are against abortion are people you wouldn't want to fuck in the first place, huh? Boy, these conservatives are really something, aren't they? They're all in favor of the unborn. They will do anything for the unborn. But once you're born, you're on your own. Pro-life conservatives are obsessed with a fetus from conception to 9 months. After that, they don't want to know about you. They don't want to hear from you. No, nothing. No neonatal care, no daycare, no Head Start, no school lunch, no food stamps, no welfare, no nothing. If you're pre-born, you're fine. If you're preschool, you're fucked. Conservatives don't give a shit about you until you reach military age. Then they think you are just fine, just what they've been looking for. Conservatives want live babies so they can raise them to be dead soldiers. Pro-life. Pro-life. These people aren't pro-life, they're killing doctors. What kind of pro-life is that? What, they'll do anything they can to save a fetus, but if it grows up to be a doctor, they just might have to kill it? They're not pro-life. You know what they are? They're anti-woman. Simple as it gets. Anti-woman. They don't like us. They don't like women. They believe a woman's primary role is to function as a broodmare for the state. Pro-life. You don't see many of these white anti-abortion women volunteering to have any black fetuses transplanted into their uteruses, do you? No, you don't see them adopting a whole lot of crack babies, do you? No, that might be something Christ would do. And you won't see a lot of these pro-life people dousing themselves in kerosene and lighting themselves on fire. You know, morally committed religious people in South Vietnam knew how to stage a goddamn demonstration, didn't they? Huh? Hey. They knew how to put on a fucking protest. Light yourself on fire! Come on, you moral crusaders, let's see a little smoke to match that fire in your belly. Here's another question I have. How come when it's us, it's an abortion, and when it's a chicken, it's an omelet? Are we so much better than chickens all of a sudden? When did this happen, that we passed chickens in goodness? Name 6 ways we're better than chickens. See, nobody can do it. You know why? Because chickens are decent people. You don't see chickens hanging around in drug gangs, do you? You don't see a chicken strapping some guy to a chair and hooking up his nuts to a car battery, do you? When's the last chicken you heard about came home from work and beat the shit out of his hand, huh? Doesn't happen, because chickens are decent people. But let's get back to this abortion shit. Now, is a fetus a human being? This seems to be the central question. Well, if a fetus is a human being, how come the census doesn't count them? If a fetus is a human being, how come when there's a miscarriage, they don't have a funeral? If a fetus is a human being, how come people say we have 2 children and 1 on the way, instead of saying we have 3 children? People say life begins at conception. I say life began about 1 billion years ago, and it's a continuous process. Continuous, just keeps rolling along. Rolling, rolling, rolling along. I say, you know something? Listen, you can go back further than that. What about the carbon atoms? Huh? Human life could not exist without carbon. So is it just possible that maybe we shouldn't be burning all this coal? Just looking for a little consistency here in these anti-abortion arguments. See, the really hardcore people will tell you life begins at fertilization. Fertilization when the sperm fertilizes the egg, which is usually a few moments after the man says, "Gee, honey, I was going to pull out, but the phone rang and it startled me." But even after the egg is fertilized, it's still 6 or 7 days before it reaches the uterus and pregnancy begins, and not every egg makes it that far. 80% of a woman's fertilized eggs are rinsed and flushed out of her body once a month during those delightful few days she has. They wind up on sanitary napkins, and yet they are fertilized eggs. So basically what these anti-abortion people are telling us is that any woman who's had more than one period is a serial killer. Consistency. Consistency. Hey, if they really want to get serious, what about all the sperm that are wasted when the state executes a condemned man and one of these pro-life guys who's watching comes in his pants, huh? there's a guy standing over there with his jockey shorts full of little Vinnies and Debbies, and nobody's saying a word to the guy. Not every ejaculation deserves a name. Now, speaking of consistency, Catholics, which I was until I reached the age of reason, Catholics and other Christians are against abortions, and they're against homosexuals. Well, who has less abortions than homosexuals? Leave these fucking people alone, for Christ's sakes. Here is an entire class of people guaranteed never to have an abortion. And the Catholics and Christians are just tossing them aside. You'd think they'd make natural allies. Go look for consistency in religion. And speaking of my friends the Catholics, when John Cardinal O'Connor of New York and some of these other cardinals and bishops have experienced their first pregnancies and their first labor pains and they've raised a couple of children on a minimum wage, then I'll be glad to hear what they have to say about abortion. I'm sure it'll be interesting. Enlightening, too. But in the meantime, what they ought to be doing is telling these priests who took a vow of chastity to keep their hands off the altar boys. Keep your hands to yourself, Father. You know? When Jesus said, "Suffer the little children, come unto me," that's not what he was talking about. So you know what I tell these anti-abortion people? I say, hey, if you think a fetus is more important than a woman, try getting a fetus to wash the shit stains out of your underwear. For no pay and no pension. I tell them, think of an abortion as term limits. That's all it is. Biological term limits. But you know, the longer you listen to this abortion debate, the more you hear this phrase, sanctity of life. You've heard that, sanctity of life. You believe in it? Personally, I think it's a bunch of shit. Well, I mean, life is sacred? Who said so? God? Hey, if you read history, you realize that God is one of the leading causes of death. Has been for thousands of years. Hindus, Muslims, Jews, Christians, all taking turns killing each other because God told them it was a good idea. The sword of God, the blood of the Lamb, vengeance is mine. Millions of dead motherfuckers. Millions of dead motherfuckers, all because they gave the wrong answer to the God question. You believe in God? No. Dead. You believe in God? Yes. You believe in my God? No. Dead. My God has a bigger dick than your God. Thousands of years. Thousands of years, and all the best wars, too, the bloodiest, most brutal wars fought, all based on religious hatred, which is fine with me. Hey, anytime a bunch of holy people want to kill each other, I'm a happy guy. But don't be giving me all this shit about the sanctity of life. I mean, even if there were such a thing, I don't think it's something you can blame on God. Now, you know where the sanctity of life came from? We made it up. You know why? Because we're alive. Self-interest. Living people have a strong interest in promoting the idea that somehow life is sacred. You don't see Abbott and Costello running around talking about this shit, do you? We're not hearing a whole lot from Mussolini on the subject. What's the latest from JFK? Not a goddamn thing. Because JFK, Mussolini, and Abbott and Costello are fucking dead. They're fucking dead. And dead people give less than a shit about the sanctity of life. Only living people care about it, so the whole thing grows out of a completely biased point of view. It's a self-serving, man-made bullshit story. It's one of these things we tell ourselves so we'll feel noble. Life is sacred. Makes you feel noble. Well, let me ask you this. If everything that ever lived is dead, and everything alive is going to die, where does the sacred part come in? I'm having trouble with that. Because, I mean, even with this stuff we preach about the sanctity of life, we don't...
36 X with Commander Pew.
36 Jesuí Commander Pew.
36
Jesuí
Commander Pew.
Commander Pew.
36
Jesuí Commander Pew.
36 Jesuí
Commander
Pew. 36 Jesuí
Commander Pew.
36 Jesuí Commander Pew.
36 Jesuí Commander Pew.
36 Jesuí Commander Pew. 36 Jesuí
Commander Pew.
36 Jesuí Commander Pew.
Oh,
the self disappears, but no other self appears to occupy the empty space it has left. No God, but rather the divine. No faith, but rather the primordial feeling that sustains all faith, all hope. Peace in the crater of the volcano, the reconciliation of man, what remains of man, with total presence.
Thank you. Voice Journal, Volume 34. Sunday, July 23rd, 2000. PM. Just come from the Malden Center tea stop. Walking in the direction of Newman Road. Today's been alright so far. Ends within scenes from the psychedelic revolution on Austin Brighton Free Radio. 44 of those shows were done on Radio Free Cambridge. The last 6 on Austin Brighton Free Radio. Next week will be a year and a half I've been doing this show. It'll be probably 4 months since I started, 4 months approximately, since I started on Austin Brighton Free Radio. That was early April. Total of 7 shows it'll be next week. I guess technically the following weekend, which would be 8 shows, would be 4 months, which would be kind of cool in a way, because that would come out to an average of 2 shows a month, which is as high as it's been in a long time. Anyway, so radio show's done, but for the week, but happily the prospect of 4 more weekends free of other obligation leads me to start thinking about how to develop it in other ways. I've been pressing toward a kind of a more of a sound collage approach. What I lack at Austin Brighton Free Radio in sound effects and a certain amount of cachet, I make up for in having more equipment. I never really had access to tape player. The best I did at Radio Free Cambridge was record my show every week, but I never had that additional tape deck that would have made such a difference in what could be done. And that's not a problem at Austin Brighton Free Radio. What that place needs is it needs more music DJ-oriented equipment. Or I need to go out and buy stuff. Or something. But it's okay for now. My time slot is okay for now. Happy to have it, because Radio Free Cambridge sunk back in February, and it's been 5 months. I know there was one or two. There were some really strong efforts. There were some meetings, and thereafter there were some possible locations, but frankly, the equipment sits idle. Meanwhile, Austin Brighton Free Radio improves its equipment week by week and is soon going to be broadcast on the internet, something Radio Free Cambridge never approached. And that's good. I mean, not that Radio Free Cambridge should approach it, but that ABFR is getting to that point. It has an air conditioner in the studio now, which is really sweet. I mean, there's no doubt there are people committed to it. And I'm happy to say after today, after doing my show, that I can say I'm committed to it too. So cool beans, man. Coming along. Meanwhile, I'm going to get home about 10 and give myself about an hour to get from arrival to prone in the dark. Street tonight, which annoys me, but letting the person who is also on my street pass me and go nice and far ahead. So, sound collages. It's conceivable to get as much as 2 turntables, 2 CD players, cassette deck, and microphone going at the same time, and possibly even more than 1 microphone. It's neat. Really, truly is. Possibilities of it. My mind's also been on Burning Man tonight. As of yesterday, 5 weeks, 35 days till I leave. So today's day 2 out of 35. Yesterday was day 1, and I've begun the push. I mean, I saw a movie yesterday, I tripped, I got a good lesson, and not about not being overwhelmed by emotion, just doing the work. Being more balanced with emotions. Not so always over the top or below the bottom, I guess you'd say. Work on Cynical 42 continues. It's not done. at all. But it continues. And I'm intending to get it done by the end of the month, as well as Joe's book. Some of this is up to me, some of this is up to Barbara, some of it's up to Joe. But without a doubt, that's my plan. That'll leave me 3.5 weeks to assemble half a dozen or so Burning Man books, new Burning Man books. Last year, I had the aid and sometimes crutch, sometimes impediment of Mio. Well, I don't even have close to that this year. Don't have her money, don't have her help, don't have her support, and I don't have her in the way. All goes well, I'm going to bring a dozen Burning Man books, 2 Scripture Press books, 3 Ray books, and half a dozen Cenacles. It's like almost 2 dozen titles to lay out on a table I don't have yet, or haven't arranged for yet. There's also the question of performing there, and the question of writing poetry for people. And everything else. The good thing is I'm not starting from scratch, in the sense that half the Burning Man books are made, 2 out of the 3 Ray books are made, 1 of the 2 Scripture Press books are made, a lot of the Cenacles are made. I mean, it's not starting from scratch at all. That said, it's going to be a lot of fucking work. The only thing I know is I intend to go, and I purchased a ticket. That's what I have right now. And in the past 2 days, I've been slowly firing up the engines of Scripture Press again. Equivalent to firing up my own engines. Really. Now in Bell Rock Cemetery, there's a lady here with a guy, an old lady, who was making all sorts of notes, and she was cataloging the gravestones. It was really cool. I got her a little bit of her voice at the end of the last volume of this series. That was neat. I told her 1 a.m. is the time to come here when it's very spiritual, and she said, "I'm sure it is." She seems sincere. It's not 1 in the morning now. It was last night. I was scared. But anyway. Now that I've gone to the movies, relaunched Senecal 42 work. Relaunched my radio show. Tomorrow is when I realize going to fucking work. I'm feeling I'm going to be squatted over the bowl for a while. That's okay. Spirits. The work's begun again. It's begun again. Love you all. I think my health woes are receding just a little bit. And that's good. I actually kind of feel like being involved with Burning Man stuff. Now that it's so close, it's so damn close. I need a plane ticket. That's how close it is. I think I'm gonna fly to Reno, but I'm not positive of that. So anyway, let's tell him. I guess tomorrow morning when I go to work, everything's cool there. And I'll certainly feel better. Girl, so much. It's weird, it's fucked up, but it's not. It's a simple thing. There's no reason why I shouldn't have it.
Well, they blew up the chicken man in Philly last night. Now they blew up his house too. Down on the boardwalk, they're getting ready. Fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's trouble busting in from out of state, and the DA can't get no relief. Gonna be a rumble out on the promenade, and the gambling commission's hanging on by the skin of its teeth. Well, now everything dies, baby, that's a fact. Maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. got a job and tried to put my money away, but I got debts that no honest man can pay. So I drew what I had from the Central Trust, and I bought us two tickets on that close city bus. Now, baby, everything dies, maybe that's a bet. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on. Stockings, baby, because the night's getting cold. Maybe everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. I've been looking for a job, but it's hard to find. Down here it's just winners and losers, and don't get caught on the wrong side of that line. Well, I'm tired of coming out on this losing end. So honey, last night I met this guy, and I'm gonna do a little favor for him. Well, I guess everything dies, maybe that's a bet. Maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Is your hair up and nice? Is that up?
Commander Q.
CIA felt that drugs derived from the mushrooms could remain an agency secret.
What in the world were they looking for with magic mushrooms?
I think the best answer to that is that they were looking for fundamental information on compounds that were would be capable of causing changes in behavior, changes in mental attitude.
Did you ever consider what would have happened if any of these substances were given to, say, unwitting people?
Oh, I don't remember having considered that specifically.
What if you... I trust perhaps you've thought about it.
Well, I haven't worried about it. Your question again, what would I have thought had I known that...
any of these substances would be
given to
unwitting persons.
You mean a hostile agent and another government?
No, I mean trusting
probably.
I mean trusting an American citizen.
I guess I must seem very cold-blooded about this, but I don't recall ever having been very much preoccupied with that issue.
But many drugs were tested in this way. A decision was made at the highest levels of the CIA to do testing on unwitting Americans. And as one CIA document says, such testing would be operationally realistic. A former CIA official who worked on these programs describes for the first time how the decision was made. He did not wish to be filmed or recorded. Thus, his remarks are read by someone else.
I think every last one of us felt sorry to attempt this test. We knew we were crossing the line. Every decent kid knows he shouldn't steal, but he does it sometimes. We knew damn well we didn't want anyone else to know what we were doing.
The decision was made to do testing on unwitting victims. It was decided they should be on the fringes of society, because they were most vulnerable.
It was the borderline underworld. Prostitutes, drug addicts, and other small-timers would be powerless to seek any kind of revenge in case they found out.
And as their predecessors had a decade earlier, the CIA turned to George White for help. White was now a high-ranking narcotics official. And by this time, the stories about George White were legendary.
So the waiter said, "Am I helping you, monsieur?" And George White was busy talking to me. I paid no attention to the waiter. So the waiter tapped him on the shoulder and says, "Am I helping you, monsieur?" And George White turned around and whipped this gun out and stuck it in the guy's face like this. He's crowded the restaurant.
George White did not mind bending the law, and he knew the street well. He was the ideal choice for what the CIA had in mind.
We were Ivy League, white, middle class. We were naive, totally naive about this, and he felt pretty expert. He knew the poorest, the pimps, the people who brought in the drugs.
White set up so-called safe houses for the CIA in New York, here in Greenwich Village. And later in San Francisco, in this hotel. And in an apartment atop Telegraph Hill with a commanding view of San Francisco Bay. While the existence of these safe houses was disclosed last year, details of what took place within them has not been told. A former CIA official who worked in the safe houses reveals that they were used not only for drug testing, but to study sexual behavior and how it could be used to manipulate people.
We did quite a study of prostitutes and their behavior. How do you take a woman who is willing to use your body to get money out of a guy, to get him to talk about things which are much more important, like state secrets? We learned a lot about human nature in the bed. We started to pick up knowledge that could be used in operations.
There would be victims in all of this, but as the agency knew, they couldn't fight back. Some entries from George White's diary. Clarice gets horror. Janet, sky high.
As one agency memo says, we have no answer to the moral question. The safe houses were not the only testing grounds. Millions of dollars would be spent on LSD research at universities throughout the country. And word would begin to spread on campus about this so-called mind-blowing drug. Suddenly, it was the counterculture of the 60s.
I give the CIA the total credit for sponsoring and initiating the entire consciousness movement, counterculture events of the 1960s.
Dr. Timothy Leary, the 1960s Johnny Appleseed of LSD.
The CIA funded, supported, and encouraged hundreds of young psychiatrists to experiment with this drug. The fallout from that was that the young psychologists began taking it themselves, discovering that it wasn't intelligence-enhancing, consciousness-raising experience.
I know that some of the studies in which the CIA had supported used as subjects people who later became strong proselytizers of LSD. So, you know, in that sense, yes, I think that did sustain the perpetuation of the use of the drug. And it's rather ironic, isn't it?
The countercase that I would make in relationship to that is to remember that the people who were doing the research were people who would be doing the research regardless of who was the sponsor. I don't think anybody working in at that time in the remotest ever thought that he would go up into the kind of thing that he did.
History will judge the role of the CIA and other intelligence agencies in unwittingly contributing to the counterculture of the 60s through their intense interest in LSD and other hallucinogenics. But for the moment at least, the argument can be made that the CIA helped usher in the Age of Aquarius.
ABC News Close Up.
Thursday, July 27th, 2000. It's about 10:15 p.m. I'm just leaving the Mullen Center T station. It's been rainy lately. Right now it's guess it's between drizzles. That's probably the best way to put it. Well, this is day 6 of my preparation for Burning Man, which I guess kind of brings this Voice Journal project full circle. Or begins to, because it was for the Burning Man 1999 trip that I bought a tape recorder in the first place. More than 10 o'clock at night, I run into brown hair, tight blue jean, tight chest, tight sweater over chest, piece of fucking jailbait. Can't get away, day or night. And the train was a real fucking tramp. Wasn't that pretty? But her t-shirt is tight and her tits are fucking huge. And there's another one, oddly enough, who looked over at me a few times, I guess. I don't know. But the good thing about tonight, on had fucking ass aside, is that I got a lot of work done. I estimate I wrote 12 pages tonight. Bring my total up to 167. Which means I only have to write 50 pages in the next 4 days to achieve 7 pages a day for July 2000. Now, I doubt that's going to happen, but I'm going to push for it. I'm certainly going to push for it. But the important thing is that for the past 13 days, and even more importantly for the past 6, but definitely for the past 13, since the middle of the month, I've been steadily increasing my writing output. And it's good. Today I worked in the Electro Lounge, the second time this week. I worked on Bags and News tonight. I finished looking over Joe's North of Jersey book. I'm definitely gonna fucking type some more of Cynical 42 before I drop. I mean, I've just been pushing the fucking thing. I've been pushing it and pushing it, and the results are showing. So it's a funny thing that, oh, and I revived my radio show last Sunday. Began the run of, I think, 5 shows in a row. And if I can pull it off, Burning Man 2. I mean, it's certainly possible, that's the bottom line. I know the restraints and limitations from last year. I mean, I did it last year. Recorded a lot of it, and it was good. It was extremely good. I can make it better this year. I really can. I really believe that. Because it's the fucking desert, it's the fucking same thing. I want to go further with the whole thing. I mean, it's very much on my mind right now. The only thing that is double-edged right now, well, there are two things. One is my health, but I think my health is bouncing back. Not getting any worse. I think I'm slowly getting better. I wish I could get more sleep at night, but I have to do my best, that's all. But it's that job. That $100 a day job is what is a double-edged sword. I feel like my new boss, Yvonne, is pressing around me, and I don't like it. Pressing like Greg did. I like her a lot more than Greg, but she's young, ambitious, and female. And I personally think she's fucking with me. I don't think she thinks she's fucking with me, but I think she's fucking with me, which is all that matters. She keeps trying to hand me little extra bits of work to do, and today I was told I can't stay past when she and my other supervisor, or whatever he is, Hans, stays. I'm sure he doesn't give a fuck, really. I think in a way he sees the larger picture, that if they alienate me too much, I'll leave. She doesn't get that. And my patience isn't eternal anymore, frankly, for bullshit. It's just not. I don't like being fucked with. I do like $100 a day. I don't like the getting up at 6:15 in the morning, or thereabouts. I hate being tired when I get off. I blame my health problems in part on that job, how it's made me feel about myself. I think that's had a direct connection with my health, which is reflected negativity. But I have to remember some crucial things. I owe money on a regular basis, even beyond the money that the government wants. I owe money for rent and for bills. This isn't going to go away as long as I'm living on my own. I'm responsible for these things, which I am. That's part one. Part two is I've developed the somewhat expensive habit of traveling. I'm doing it for my art's sake. Even my art has become somewhat expensive. In order to make it work, I need an income. And the income I've had since January of this year has been a sizable one. And because of it, I've been able to do a lot of shit. I've been able to make progress. I don't have school to rely on anymore at the end of the summer, and it's financial aid. For 3 consecutive autumns and 2 consecutive springs, I had that to rely on. But I don't have that anymore. And so I can't deal in those terms anymore. I got through 3 consecutive summers. It's 97, 98, and 99. Knowing if I survive till September or thereabouts, there's going to be financial aid at the end of it. I got through last year on by Mio's purse. Because frankly, there was a point where I stopped working. Because I was working on Burning Man full time. Well, I'm not working on Burning Man full time this year. I don't have to, and it's just not going to happen. And neither she nor anybody else is financing my way of life. Which is good in a way, I guess. I'm a survivor and a fighter. But the bottom line is that surviving and fighting can take up too much of a person's time, and one can become a full-time fucking survivor and fighter. And that's not good. Right now I've achieved a very tenuous balance between health, employment, and art. That's why the last 13 days have been so important. And especially the last week. I'm gonna make it in tomorrow. Hello, spirits. I'm gonna make it into work tomorrow. I'm gonna do my best to survive it without any conflicts and without writing any letters of resignation or giving any notice. And then I'll make it through a full week of work. And I'll get, as a result of it, a full $500, which will go into the hands of that evil motherfucker who owns the condo I live in. But the bottom line is, it will go into his fucking hands. It'll go into his hands, and there it'll be. And the next time around, if I can hold out for 2 more weeks, I'll pay some bills, and I'll start paying up some of the Burning Man shit I've got to buy. I've got to buy a plane ticket, I've got to pay Chuck the totem fee, which will sure be of meals out of Burning Man and other things. I mean, once I join that, $75 I pay him is nothing, really, overall, in comparison with what I'll get back, the cooked meals and all that. So, like for a while I was just holding on till Fish Tour, and now I feel like I'm holding on till Burning Man. And this is a harder stretch. This is 5 solid weeks. And I hope that she backs off. I really hope that she fucking backs off. I somehow have to keep it uppermost in my mind that I'm doing a job that apparently my predecessors didn't do as well, that they don't want to have to find someone else to do, that they don't want to do themselves. It's an unloved, unrespected job. They're not trying to push me out the door like Quantum Books did, which was my last full-time gig that ran of any length. On the contrary, I think that they're trying to get more of their money's worth out of me. They want me to do more. But it's not because they don't respect what I do now, they just think that I have too much free time. And I fuck around too much. But, to be honest, at some point I'm going to say that I can't do anymore. I'll say it if I have to. I should keep walking, spirits. I'd like not to. I'd like to indicate by my facial expressions and verbal tones that I don't want to be fucked with, that I do the fucking job and I leave. But I don't know how far this Yvonne woman is going to push me. She's not smart. She's not smart. If she's testing me, I'm giving her definite results. And I'm going to give her a cold fucking shoulder if she keeps pushing me. Because that's the way I defend myself. That's the only way I defend myself. That's the only defense I have. I have no defense at all there. And I'm not going to stop being at Land's End, which takes up most of the free time that I insist upon for myself. And which I'm sure she'd love to cut out as a fucking bureaucrat. Middle management. Well, it's not going to be cut out. Because if I don't have Land's End, if I don't have email, then I'm completely cut off from everything and everybody. Completely. I sit there at a desk with no one near me at all. No one to talk to. No one I'd want to talk to. And I sit there in silence, doing this horrible work. So, they're not going to take it away from me. I'm going to say, I have no one to talk to here. I have no friends. I have friends on the internet. I talk to them. It doesn't interfere with me doing the job that I was hired to do. Unless you're planning to pay me more, I'm not going to do anything different. I hope I can prove flexible, but she's just got to get out of my face. I see her doing a Greg. Nicer, but the same thing. The same efforts at getting me to do more work, the same attempts to limit me, which is another way of putting me in my place. And the fact that I don't pay attention, the fact that I don't listen, the fact that I don't respond to the fucking whip, which I don't, is something she's gonna have to deal with. I wouldn't want to be her dealing with me. If I were her, I'd leave me alone, frankly. Because I don't respond well to the fucking whip. Anyway, it was a good night of work. I want to end on a positive note. and I'm going to get through tomorrow, and I'm not going to quit. I'm going to finally send out my resume, and I'm going to meet with Joe, and we're going to continue making a damn good book. Through my door, main door of the building. Good night.
Commander Q.
36
Jesuit
Commander Q.
Commander Q.
Thank you.
Nathaniel X. Wiz Commander Q.
36 Jésus-Yves Commander Q.
11 p.m. walking along Derby Road in Milford, Massachusetts. Work week nearly done, and my contract nearly done, though not, as has happened so often before, contract on less unemployment. This time around, happily, it's contract done, and then the following Monday, full time. It's such a good thing that it's hard to think about it. From any sort of detached perspective, because I'll be doing the same job with a different title, senior technical writer, which I think is, you know, just what it should be. And I'm grateful that's what it shall be. And money will be the same, because my student loan is officially done, paid. I saw it on the internet screen myself this morning. Nice, your loan is paid. That's what the message was. So, I don't think I could have predicted that 30 years ago when I first moved to Boston and moved into the tiny apartment on St. Botolph Street in Back Bay, that it would be 30 years to the conclusion of the loan money. I was just starting to use at that time for rent and other things. I just knew that I had to get out of Connecticut and I had to get to Boston. And there wasn't any other parts of the matter. I didn't know I'd be going to two different graduate schools as well at that time, in the long course of things. I don't think, honestly, I had a plan very long term at that point.
Hello.
I was 28 years old and happy to have Connecticut, and borrowing money and going to graduate school. I was also still in the, by the time I moved in September 92 to Boston, it had been a year since she'd been done with me. I don't think there had been any contact on her end at all. There was one call my roommate took. That was her, he saw it. But never called back and never responded to any of my too numerous calls to even wonder at. It was a year. But I mean, that year processing through that rejection. Also, I got turned down by the school that she went to down in North Carolina, UNC. So I wasn't going to be anywhere near her geographically anyhow, to continue to make my case. The only two schools that wanted me for graduate school for Masters in English were Northeastern and Boston College. Boston College had too many crosses on its campus. I was slow to figure out it was a Catholic college. I don't think I knew such things existed. That was my limited knowledge of almost everything at that time. And Northeastern was a not very long jaunt. It was walkable to the Museum of Fine Arts. And that was, doesn't matter to me. Haven't changed much since then, really. So there it was 30 years ago, getting those first checks, or rather getting, you know, big old check and putting it in the mail, and putting it in the bank, excuse me, and then living off it until the next one came. And here's 30 years later, and I've been around from one end of the country to the other, close to the other, and back more than once. And I don't live in Boston, but St. Botolph Street anymore, though while it would be a really long walk, it is not epically far from here. It's actually a train ride. when you look back all those years, and it's this loan that just kind of got paid off is one of the few things that endured my life from then. I mean, not much else. Not much by way of people. Boston's still there. It's still familiar to me when I go in. It's changed the course in 30 years, but it's still basically the city it was 30 years ago in many ways. So things are gearing up for my work a bit in terms of stuff. I'm going to be getting some training in biology I guess the end of March. And I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be in person too. It's going to be a dry dock, which is where the company's main headquarters is located in Seaport. And that'll be good. Good to be around my colleagues, and only good to be full-time. I mean, nobody ever treated me any less for not being full-time, but I just don't have to do that dance anymore. You know? The commitment is made on both ends, and how it is. I'm running out of tape, so I'm going to cut this walk a little bit short. But it's all good. I just have to keep up my part. Do what I've been doing, do more. At least figure out how to do more, do better. Never let the gratefulness I feel be slow to show in the work I do. And I think so far so good. So I just had to keep it up. Keep it up. That's when we cut it short and actually end up going in the right direction. Anyway, that is just about the end of this volume. I don't want to end it mid-sentence, so I'm trying to be real crafty, but it's ending on a nice note. That's the bottom line. It's ending on a nice note, and I can be, I am grateful for that being so.
Only one major tablet has more. An added relief action in many cases that Tylenol never provides. And the protection ingredients. Bufferin.
Now I'm careful thinking. Now I'm careful. With Bufferin. With Bufferin.
Your sick traps fought with risk. All those crystal granules.
I'll pour it like a plumber.
Don't. You may not work come at risk time.
No?
Crystal Drano will. Look, liquid pumice dry and it's not melting as grease.
The Drano is. It broke through. Will Drano hurt metal pipes?
No.
So liquid pumice can break that grease cloud. I'm switching to Drano.
To make pumice go, many use Drano.
Saturday, live on BBC. The Forest Hills Benson Invitational from the legendary West Side Tennis Club. With prize, 3-hour coverage of the most prestigious ladies' golf event. Palace seats equals for our third straight U.S. Women's Open titles. And for now, Nancy Lopez shoots for her elusive first Open victory. And on ABC's Wild Community Sports, warrior excitement from the Wild West. Plus high speed, tie thrills, high goal win action. Championship tennis, draw at ABC's Wild Community Sports. Saturday.
Wednesday on 80s and up.
The Bradford girls go disco crazy.
Hey, hiya, hon. Hey, hiya.
The summer's off, good red hot star. And Charlie's Angels play the horse.
I want to be a jack.
And the dead heat will dance. The ghost of Jack the Ripper haunts the back streets of the bay. Tomorrow, starting at 8, 7, 7.
A man stand over a dead dog by the highway in the ditch. He's looking down, kind of puzzled, poking that dog with a stick. Got his car door flung open, he's standing out on Highway 31. Like if he stood there long enough, that dog get up and run. Struck me kind of funny, some kind of funny suddenly. Still at the end of every hard day, people find some reason to believe. And I married a little love Johnny with a love mean and true. She said, baby, I'll work for you every day, bring my money home to you. Up and left her, and ever since that, she waits down at the end of that dirt road for young Johnny to come back. Struck me kind of funny, funny indeed. At the end of every hard earned day, we'll find some reason to. Take a baby to the river, Kyle William, they call him. Wash the baby in the water, take away a little Kyle sound. In a whitewash shotgun shack, that old man paces away. Take your body to the graveyard, over him they pray. Lord, won't you tell us? Tell us, what does it mean? At the end of every hard-earned day, people find some reason to believe. Congregation gathers down by the riverside. Preacher stands where the Bible, room stands waiting for his bride. Congregation on the sun sets behind a weeping willow tree. Groom stands alone and watches the river rush on so effortlessly. Wondering, where can his baby be? Still at the end of every hard-earned day, he'll find some.
Tell me how.